Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, listeners. This episode of the Battlestar Galactic cast may feature spoilers for events that come later on in the series. So be warned.
Be warned.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat. This is an official colonial government broadcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Battlestar Galactic cast, brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire. My name is Mark Bernardin.
And I am Trisha Helfer.
Hey, Trisha. I came in hot that time. I realized, like, every time we do a podcast and I do the hello, it probably just wows and pops people's speakers out.
Well, it's a good way to start.
I know. It could be your alarm clock sound. Like, if you ever just, like, soundly sleeping, hello! Like, no!
You've been a little bit more subdued for the last few podcasts, though, so it's nice to get back to the norm.
I know. It's the morning podcast doldrums of, like, getting up to speed about halfway through. But for some reason, this morning, I came in hot. So, perhaps a way too hot.
No, well, you know, we got quite an episode to talk about, so...
We do. Guess What's Coming to Dinner, episode 407, which was written by Michelangeli and directed by Wayne Rose.
Wayne Rose was actually the first AD for almost, I think, the entire series, or almost the entire series.
Wow, and then he got the call.
So, he got to direct them.
That's yes. Awesome.
Lovely, lovely gentleman with a more fracked up back than I have. A little personal information, but I sent him to my back doctor that did my back surgery. And I think he had a 13 or 15 hour surgery with like five attending doctors or something. So,
yeah, I remember when we did the live read for 33, Wayne stopped by. And
he did. Yes.
And it turned into this scene out of Jaws between Truco and Wayne, kind of like trying to one-up each other about how awful their back surgeries were. Where Truco's like, you know, I've got like 98 pins in my neck, and if I turn this way, I can hear the metal grinding. And Wayne's like, I had a 15-hour surgery back here. Most of these vertebrae are fake. And it's like, I skinned my knee once.
Where was I in that conversation? I'm half bionic as well. Like... I guess I was hosting.
Yeah.
Not part of.
I was literally.
Yeah, like, we got a couple of fucked up backs in our Battlestar. Like,
I've never broken a bone. I've never sprained anything. I've never had any major surgery. And I'm just sitting around going, like, I have bad headaches every now and again, mostly when I drink a lot.
Self-imposed bad headaches.
I know. It's like, oh, so you have hangovers. I do, but they're like really bad.
Well, count yourself lucky.
I know. But I did feel like I shouldn't be in this conversation. Where's the conversation for people who don't like impact sports? But anyway, Wayne seemed like a lovely person.
Yes, Wayne is. A lovely, lovely man.
Yes. But previously on the Battlestar Galactic cast... Leoben takes Kara, and again with the British Kara. I don't know where that comes from. Well, I do know where it comes from, but it's pointless. A friend of mine is named Kara, and she's a journalist. She works for People Magazine, and every time she interviews Tom Hiddleston, which she's had to do a lot, so they've come to be somewhat friendly. So it was like, Kara, it's so nice to see you with his like plummy British evil accent. And so now every time I hear, see Kara, it becomes Kara.
Kara.
Hello, Kara. But Leoben takes Kara back to her the base ship. The hybrid gets her plug pulled. Gata gets shot in the knee. and Laura's made a little bit of peace with her imminent death.
Oh, wow. Very well done.
Thank you. No, it's like a shitty voice theater.
Well, I think you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, a lot happened last episode, and it bleeds right into this one.
Yes, and so we're pressing play on the sci-fi original. Boom! Yes, okay. I muted it just in time!
And we still got the Spanish subtitles.
I know, it's kind of amazing. Thank you, sci-fi.com, for helping teach me Spanish.
If only I was actually taking the opportunity to learn Spanish instead of just half-ass learn some words and
yes,
learn the ones that affect me. But
una cerveza, por favor. Uno más cerveza. Let's not be crazy.
You did say you can have some massive hangers. So
yes. Uno más tequila, por favor.
I did have some tequila last night.
Oh, how many masses?
3.
All right. Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah. Tequila's neat. Maybe like 2 fingers. So I didn't go nuts.
No, I can't do tequila. We could just suddenly turn this episode into the let's talk about our booze history. Let me tell you why I can't do tequila. There was one night in Utah that just got out of hand.
I've had a couple nights in Mexico that got out of hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Yeah, I won't be having tequila tonight. But no. This episode is, it starts out with Baltar. I'm not sure. Do we find out? I'm a little brain foggy yet. Do we find out how he finds out? But anyway.
In this episode, we do.
We do. Okay.
Yeah.
It'll have to play for me to remember what I read, what I watched last night while drinking tequila. Now, he finds out that Rosalind has been sharing visions with Sharon and Caprica.
Indeed.
And of course, plays it up that she's sharing visions with the 2 Cylons aboard the ship.
Yeah.
Well, the 2 known Cylons.
And I like that this scene, in case you've forgotten, Lee Adama on the show, because he's been a little sporadic this season. Because, you know, it's with Lee no longer a member of the military, you know, finding lots of points of collision between him and every other character is hard. You know, he's a member of the Quorum, so the only person he really has any conflict or even contact with is Rosalind. And so we kind of reset the fact that they are not buddies anymore. He is no longer her Captain Apollo. They are now sort of political enemies. And you know, he's got problems with the way she's conducting herself as the leader of the government. And she has problems with his problems.
Yeah, she has problems with his problems. Very well put. Yeah, it's interesting to see this relationship that was close because he was on the inside,
mm-hmm.
right? To the inside on the military side, not the government side, to then come to heads,
mm-hmm.
and what it does to their relationship. But there's still a respect. Like you see that there's still a respect, but I think she just wants to haul off and punch him.
Yeah. Like it feels like there's respect, but some of it is a little bit one-sided, you know, where, you know, she says, as long as I'm in this office, the welfare of this fleet is not something you need to worry about. It's like, oh, Laura, that's a bit harsh. But okay.
Yeah. Well, she says some stuff here, like later on in the episode too, about just the Quorum is worried about their bits and pieces, but I'm worried about the entire thing.
Yeah. Like I have to
hold keeping people alive.
I have to hold the entire fleet's safety in my hands. I don't have time to worry about 12 perpetually unhappy delegates.
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, they'd be unhappy in a normal situation, but in something like this, when they're going back to their constituents trying mm-hmm. to say that they're fighting for them, and when just the world is blown up, it's got to be hard for. I'm giving a little bit of kudos to each of the delegates.
Yes, well done.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we're now on the base ship as they're trying to synchronize their jumps, because I think everybody involved realizes that if a Cylon base ship just bounces into the fleet, it's going to set off some alarm bells. And so the plan is that both the Demetrius and the base ship will jump in together in order to preserve everybody. And they're synchronizing the boards, and the boards are green, and everything's spooled up, and they're going around the horn, and everybody's checking off. You know, FTL, spun up, navigation, green, blah, 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 base ship. It's very ping-pongy, and it's kind of naval and cool. And then we get some little moments of, hon, how do you know Hera's name? We all know Hera's name.
We all know Hera's name. And Hera was on the base ship for a good portion of a season.
Right. Like either like 3 weeks or a year and a half.
That's why I went with a good portion. There was a little delay. Hera was on a base ship for a good portion.
Yeah. For like first grade. Like all of first grade that kid was on a base ship. Maybe. I don't know. Time.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a reason that Natalie knows.
Yeah. And if you couldn't look down the road and see that this simultaneous jump would go poorly, then yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen television before.
Yeah, that was pretty obvious that was going to happen.
Yeah, like
telegraph. But it sets up a cool moment for Ty.
Oh, it's awesome. Like this whole bit is just so great because it's been a while since we've seen, like, you know, threats and chaos on the bridge of in the CIC of Galactica, where like we got to scramble the fleet, we got to like weapons, we got to like spool everything up, we got to launch the alert Vipers, we got to do all this stuff.
Yeah, the fleet starts jumping away to the emergency coordinates.
Yeah, and I love the scale of it. Like, you never quite know how big a base ship is, because you always see them kind of far away. Like, there's nothing for reference. So, like, once this thing jumps into the fleet and dwarfs everything, including Galactica, you're like, how long has, like, this ship is so tiny. It's a miracle they've survived at all. Look at this.
And the base ship is losing some of its arms. Yeah. They're blown off, so it's totally smaller than normal.
It's like this octopus that had just been like beached and starting to like decay. And it's like, oh, you guys never stood a chance, humans.
No, but the humans can't really see, right? Because they just see it on Dratus. It's not like they're looking out the window of Galactica going, ooh, like, it's kind of beaten up.
It's like, and also it's huge, you guys. I don't know.
Yeah, and the everyone on board the base ship is just waiting to be, you know, blown up because they know they're sitting ducks.
Yeah, you know, and Adama is like, fuck it, let's go. Let's go to war. Like, they're here. We got to shoot at them. And he's literally, you know, counting down, about to fire, and then Ty steps in, weapons hold.
And you can see he doesn't even know why. Like, he's just...
Yeah.
I just feel it.
Yeah. Sorry. Weapons hold.
Weapons hold.
I got to growl it a bit.
You have to with Ty.
Yeah. You know, and then
it's in the fracking ship.
It's in the fracking ship.
And then that was a poppy pee at the end.
I know. I got a little like suffering succotash at the end of that. But yeah, and you know, just after the weapons hold, in comes Demetrius, and then Athena like comes on the squawk box and says, like, hey, don't fire. The base ship is under colonial control. It's us, you guys. There are officers on board. And then everybody's like, what?
Shit, we almost blew up our own people.
Yeah, like, Bill, you'd have never forgiven yourself if you blew up Kara.
Yeah, no.
Which he was for sure about to do.
Which, yep, was very close.
Oh. Yeah, so much fun. But, yeah, it's just I appreciate that, you know, in the final season of a show, the producers, the writers, producers, directors, cast, everybody kind of realizes the things an audience is kind of wanting to see for the last time, you know, or will feel good about having seen for the last time. And now they're like, this is the final episode, but like there will get to be these grace notes as we go of just like, oh, hey, there's that thing that I've loved the entire time I've seen the show. Here's this thing, here's this person doing this role. that I'm a huge, you know, softy for.
So as a writer, do you purposely, you think about that and purposely put that in?
You know, I would hope so. I can't speak from experience because I've never gotten a chance to end a show on purpose. I've been on shows that were canceled in between seasons. You know, basically got, you know, they got sixed in the cradle.
Right.
But I do long for the opportunity to, you know, get to tell the story and finish it on your own terms and find your ways to make these moments harmonize with what viewers have seen going forward. Like the themes of the show are still in place and still, you know, have resonance, and that you can echo. It becomes like music, I would think. You know, that like, you know, there are motifs and there are leitmotifs and there are harmonies and strands and all that stuff that you get to, like, once you get to end your concerto, it should come full circle. It should feel as if you've been taken on a journey that ends back at the beginning, but you're all different for it. And getting to do that stuff is the dream of every person who makes shit up for money.
Yes, I agree.
Yes.
And then, so we are now in, Natalie is explaining their case to Rosalind and Adama and Ty. Yeah. And Tori, who's taking notes diligently.
Indeed.
But she's like, you know, she says, Rosalind goes, why should we trust you? And I like what the six says. You ask for a reason to trust us. Vengeance. Mm-hmm. You destroy the hub. Cylons lose their ability to download. All of us. They're, you know, and she talks later. I'll wait till I get later when she talks to the quorum. She says something a little bit poignant.
Indeed. Very deep. But yeah, like I like that this scene and that quorum scene are, you know, basically they're just it's exposition, right? It's emotional exposition. It's here's the answers to all of these questions at once in ways that can help both these characters and the viewer, like, kind of reorient themselves. Like, why are we doing this? What is this all about? What's the significance of the final five? What does everybody in this room want? And making it clear and plain, because this is, you know, again, we're seven episodes into a 22 episode final season. And, you know, now is about when you need to set the terms for the finale, right? For the last kind of story arc. And it's, we want the final five, because the final five will, you know, teach us who we are and what we're meant to be. And you want the final five because it'll lead you to Earth. And then all we want to do is live with our, you know, sort of prophet gods in happy harmony. Finitely. We no longer want to live forever.
Yeah, we no longer want to live forever. But of course, half of the Cylons do. So they need the help as well, because they're,
right. Yeah, they're we're the rebels.
They're the rebels. Yes. I like that. I'm a rebel in it.
Totally. You're the leader of the Rebel Alliance.
I'm the leader of the Rebel Alliance.
You're like the Princess Leia of Cylons.
Oh.
Oh, hello. I'm a princess and a general.
I'm a princess. No, I was sort of. Aren't I sort of more like the Roslyn of the Cylons?
Well, maybe it's more like you're like the Stalin, the Lenin of the Cylons. It's just like I've risen from the proletariat to become the supreme leader of this little band of rebels, and our philosophy is this. And but yes, you're not a princess, but you're a rebel leader.
I'm a rebel leader. I mean, I'll take it.
Unless you want to be a princess, that's also totally fine.
I would be happy to be a princess and be pampered and live in a castle. I don't see that happening.
Right. Maybe once you can go back to Romania, you can just, or Slovakia, you can just pick one. I would like this castle.
They're all pretty old, those castles.
I know. I will give you $75 American for this castle.
With no running water and no.
Nope.
I think I'll Yeah, maybe I'll take an Italian castle or a Swiss castle.
Ooh, a nice villa, like an old Medici villa or something. There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Gator.
Yeah, poor Gator.
The one thing that we find in this, this scene is just horrifying to me, where he just wants to be numbed. He does not want to be put out for the amputation of his leg because he doesn't want to wake up with it gone. He wants to experience the loss of his leg. And even if you are numbed, can you imagine hearing the cutting through?
Yeah, and like the pulping of it, like it's not a clean sound. It's like here's the cleanness, and then here's where we hit bone, and like oh god, yeah, just the sound,
and the movement on the leg. Even if you know, even if you're not feeling the pain, you're still feeling it, and which is his point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to me, it was horrifying to watch, and having gone through surgeries, which we talked about at the beginning of, that stuck to me because when I've gone through two surgery, my back surgery and I had sinus polyps. So I had polyps removed, which was just a day thing. But both times I'm one of those people that my body subconsciously records it. Mm. My mind subconsciously records it. So even if I'm knocked out, I struggle later with feelings of like after my back surgery, feeling, you know, and I couldn't sleep for weeks because I thought I would sense my body getting, the second I closed my eyes, I would see my body being cut open, and I would like, so my body was going through, or my brain subconsciously recorded it and fucked with me for weeks afterwards, months. But so to me, Gaeta, like, wanting to consciously instead of subconsciously really actually hit a tone or a nerve with me where I was like, I understand that.
Yeah.
Because at least then it's in his conscious mind, not his subconscious, you know? I don't know what's better, but anyway, little side note.
Yeah, little side note.
Surgeries can be mess with you.
I the one surgery that I've had more than once is wisdom teeth getting removed. And the first time I had them removed, I had it done twice. The first time I had the top two, the second time the bottom two, or vice versa. I don't remember. There's a lot of pain. But the first time was like, hey, we could either knock you completely out, which is expensive, or we could put you in quote-unquote twilight, which is like, we'll just give you the funny gas. And like, you won't notice it so much. And that's a lie, because I noticed all of it. And I remember all of it. And then the second time I had like the other two out, the guy's like, we're going to put you in twilight. I was like, fuck you. Fuck that. Like, you knock me out. Like, because I remember too much of the last time. And then I like gently fell asleep and woke up and my teeth were gone. I'm like, yes, this really? Is what it's about.
I was awake for my wisdom teeth being taken out.
No, yeah.
I also do. I hate the freezing. So if I have a cavity, if I have like a medium to small cavity, I just do it without any freezing.
You're a crazy person.
And the doctor's like, you're the only one that does this. I'm like, I hate the freezing. I would rather deal with the short amount, the pain, than not be frozen and slobbering for 6 hours.
I'm good with the slobber. Fine with the slobber.
Anyway, back to Battlestar.
Thanks for tuning in to Trish and Mark's Pain Chronicles.
Totally getting all the information on my surgeries and Pain Chronicles today, yeah.
And so, yeah, here we are back with what seems to be now the inner circle of the military, which is Ty, Adama, Roslyn, and Hilo, who's the, you know, I suppose that Hilo is still the XO because he was promoted as such when Ty was, you know, struggling with, you know, it's in the fucking ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Ty's there because he's still Ty. And they're just trying to decide what to do about the Cylons and
the information that they've just gotten about unboxing the Deannas, which of course Ty does not want.
No. He says, frack the Cylons. Then we just trust the president's visions and the scriptures and they'll lead us to Earth. But it seems as if even Roslyn is no longer sure about that. Or she's not even sure that she will survive the trip. You know, like she never says that. It never becomes text, but it feels like some of the subtext is, I no longer trust that I'm going to be there to navigate us, even if I'm right. And I'm not sure that I'm right. And if this is a way that we can actually, you know, I can do my job, which is secure the safety of this fleet, then we have to explore it.
Yeah. And if the raiders aren't fighting, the centurions are not everything the Cylons are saying is actually coming true. Like, they have a reason to trust them. Mm-hmm. Here.
You know, and even, you know, Rosalind's final solution is like, let's split the difference. Like, we'll unbox Deanna, we'll find the five, and then we'll keep the five until we get to Earth, and then we'll hand them over to the rebels on our terms. But, you know, it's all pie in the sky until we know what's true and what's not.
Which you find, you know, the Cylons, I don't think we're there yet, but they have the same thing of like, we have to have some sort of guarantee. So we'll hold some hostages. Right. You know, you see both sides, and you both, as a viewer, you see both sides, and you're like, if you guys just trust each other, but mm-hmm. they're both doing the exact same thing.
Totally. It's like
trusting to a point.
You both want the same thing. Like, you know, Natalie's initial sort of reasoning is sound. You know, our interests are aligned. You know, you want to find Earth. We want to find the final five. They are the key to your Earth. So let's help each other. Everybody gets what they want. And now they are resorting to their lesser natures by distrust.
You know,
and speaking of distrust, the Quorum is like, wait, what's happening? Why weren't we told about this? Who does she think she is?
And Lee realizes he's not in that inner circle anymore, which has got to be a little bit of a gut punch for him because he's unaware.
Totally. He's as on the outside as anybody else is, you know, and he used to be on the inside, and that can't feel good.
That cannot feel good. No.
No. You know, and the four members of the five are just now hanging out on the Galactica and hangar deck because nobody's there. All of the ships and everything is in the base star, in the base ship. And while Tori and Ty are concerned about what's going to happen with them, and Tyrell is just like, I don't care, whatever, let's find one, let's find Earth. Anders just he's fixated on Geta, like that he sings. Every time he can hear the twinge of his phantom limb, he starts to sing.
Now, do you think it's like a guilt thing because he's the one that shot him and he's feeling bad? Or is he thinking that he's maybe the fifth because he sings and there was the whole music that got them all, like triggered them all?
I thought it was a guilt thing, but I had never even thought about thinking that Geta might be the fifth.
I thought, because they said something about, well, we'll at least find out who the fifth is. And then Andrew starts talking about Geta singing. Mm. And so that's what I put it to, but I wasn't quite sure of it or not.
I love this scene with Tori and Rosalyn. Like that Tori comes bounding in, like, you know, got some spring in her step. She had herself a pretty good time with in the sex, girly, sexy, sex, whatever.
Although she has Rosalyn renames it this time. She's your practice. You're down there a lot. You're practically a charter member of his nymph squad. That'll be easier to remember, nymph squad.
I know. I like that she's got all of these names for it. But this scene is just like, it's brutal because Tori's like, I'm caught. Like, I've been a bad girl and mom caught me and she knows my secrets. And just, and the whole thing is about trying to find out who is telling Baltar about the shared hallucinations. We got to find the secret of that. We got to find the source of that information. And she's like, well, you know, Baltar keeps on, you know, broadcasting his pirate transmissions. You're sleeping with him. You find out. And she's like, what? Me? I've been informed that you've been, down there enough times to be a charter member of Nymph Squad. I don't care if you have to spend the night on your knees praying or just on your knees. I want a name. It's like, oh, man.
I was like, whoa.
Damn.
The gloves just came out.
That is. And she's like, Laura, don't hate me. He does the thing.
Yeah. He does this thing.
Yeah.
Like, that makes my toes pull back.
When was the last time your toes curled, Laura? So now she too is on the outside, just like poor Leah Dama. Mm-hmm. you know, and like you said, that, you know, we then go to the Cylons, to the rebels, and they are making their own plans because, yes, they don't trust anybody.
And yep, their so they're going to keep, is to keep hostages.
Yes, use the Centurions.
Until they find Earth and then release the hostages when they get the final five.
Right. Yeah. It's and the using the Centurions is the hard part. You know, the Centurions are going to retake the ship. But the Centurions clearly now, you know, have their own agency. And they are not entirely satisfied just ordering and being ordered around. Which will come in less than handy when later on there's a change of heart. Like, but we can't just tell them not to do it, right? Like we used to be able to.
Yep, there's maybe... Fiona, get out of the way. There's maybe a little bit of regret of them taking out that whatever mm-hmm. in their... Yeah.
Yeah.
In their programming.
And we get, for the first time, to hear AJ's Alessandro Giuliani's lovely opera voice.
And I love how Rosalind, in there for her cancer treatment, Duloxin treatment, says, what a way to discover such a beautiful voice. Eh?
Yeah.
It's like the context that they're in, but this just beautiful, haunting voice that AJ is singing with throughout the rest of the episode. It's we were all the same too. I mean, the character, Rosalind, says it here, but we're all, wait, AJ can sing?
Like, you could do this the whole time and you never told anybody?
Why haven't we heard him singing before?
We could have been winning karaoke competitions all over Vancouver.
Yes. And I'm sure a lot of the Vancouver actors that, you know, knew of him before compared to us LA actors that just met him on Battlestar. Because AJ is huge into the Vancouver theater scene.
Wow.
So I'm sure they all knew he could sing. But all of us non-Vancouverites were blown away by his talent.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
When I worked at Entertainment Weekly, which was in the west side of Manhattan, it was at 52nd and Broadway, which is where the offices were. But we were all young and stupid, and most of us were single. And so whenever we'd close a magazine on a Tuesday night, we would then, it'd be like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, we would then go to some like west side bar, like Hell's Kitchen or whatever, and just drink until dawn, because we could do that. This apparently is a booze podcast without booze. And and I think, if I remember correctly, it was either Monday nights or Tuesday nights, was like understudy karaoke night. So like every Broadway actor who's understudying the like any role on a Broadway show would roll out to these like West Side bars and do karaoke. And it became like this, oh, that's right. Everybody in this room is a world-class musical theater performer. And they're still not the number one on the call sheet. You know, they're still not the lead role in Pippin or whatever. Right. But if they want to like lean in to any song in the world, it will make you never want to sing again. Oh, there you go. Right. That person could be Stevie Nicks for all we know, because she's phenomenal. And oh, that guy, hitting all those high notes, doing the sting on Roxanne. Nope, not getting up there tonight.
My ass going to stay firmly planted in the chair.
Indeed. Don't need that harsh check of reality. Thank you.
That's why I hate karaoke.
Yeah. There's always that one person who's like, hold my beer.
I got this. But doesn't go first, so everybody else doesn't. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait till people
embarrass themselves. Oh, so cute. Hold on.
This is how you do it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while I was telling Boo stories, we missed Lee going to Roslyn in the hospital in the sort of during her cancer treatment, and telling her that the quorum is considering a vote of no confidence, and he implores her to just talk to them like they're afraid and they've lost hope, and the only way for them to regain that hope is for you to be honest with them, for you to treat them not like, you know, puppets and annoying children, but to treat them as if they're adults.
Treat them with respect. Treat them with respect. Are just trying to do their job.
Yeah. Like, yes, they're feckless, and yes, they're a little bit annoying, but they're still the quorum, and you still have responsibility. And
he also puts the idea that she should let the Cylon speak as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, let them hear from the Cylon leader. Anything to put their fears to rest. And you can tell that, like, they're not, you know, sort of antagonizing each other in this moment. Like, he is honestly trying to reach out to her. And she is, for the first time in what seems like a season, open to hearing it, you know, since he put her on the stand.
And he is giving her good advice. I think it is ultimately good advice.
Totally. But yeah, here we are back in there. There's no toe curling tonight. Tori is just fraught, distraught.
Distraught.
And perhaps using the pouty face to elicit information. Like, this doesn't seem entirely genuine.
No, she's definitely playing Baltar to you know, inform her of who he's hearing this from.
Yeah. And he gives it up pretty much without a fight. Like, for somebody who's got some experience in political maneuvering. You know, one pouty face and one lack of curled toes. And he's like, oh, let me tell you everything. Don't be so weak, Gaius.
But he says it's Caprica 6.
He does. He says that that Caprica 6, and as we remember, told Romo Lampkin to pass it on to him during his trial. She is experiencing shared visions. And so that's his source. Like, it's not like it's somebody within the colonial government. It's not as if it's somebody within the, you know, freaky deaky sex cult, the nymph squad. It is Caprica 6 who told him, you know, a season ago.
A season.
You know, and he's like, I'm no saint. You know, I wouldn't make that shit up, but Roslyn isn't either. You know, she's co-opting the rhetoric of patriotism to keep everyone in the dark, including you. Truth is, no good ever comes from concealing it. I do like how he says patriotism.
Patriotism. No.
The short A, patriot.
I forgot that Caprica told Romo.
Yeah. Caprica.
I forgot that. Yeah. I was watching that going, he's probably talking about number 6. You just reminded
six?
Me. It was actually Caprica 6, who is sharing the visions. So she was speaking from experience.
Yeah. Oh, there goes the leg. Oh, Gaeta.
You said Gaeta. I was about to say AJ, and it just came out. Aja.
Aja. Hey, Aja.
Gaeta.
Gaeta. Yeah. More singing.
It just breaks my heart in this episode, because it is the beginning of his descent.
Yes, he's gonna have a rough time.
Yes,
poor Gaeta. And Roslyn takes Lee's advice, you know, and she comes like she's not wearing any makeup. The wig isn't entirely as well kempt and well manicured as it normally is. And she comes to explain to them, you know, why she believes in the mission, why she believes it's important. And, you know, Adama's there and Katie is there. Excuse me. Kara's there. And a bunch of Marines. And I'm sure they're like, why are the Marines here? Because.
Does he have to duck to get in the door?
Yeah. Yoink. Natalie's here. Have we ever heard her referred to as Natalie, or is that just a thing that you guys knew during production? I don't think she ever gets a name.
Because I said this early on when we first introduced, and I was like, I did this whole spiel about how it was Natalie, and I don't think we've once heard anybody call her Natalie.
Because that's now just become how I, like, Natalie says this, and Natalie does this, and Natalie walks in here, and it's like, but how do we know her name is Natalie?
You know, I'd have to go back to the scripts and see if they wrote her as Natalie. I think that's how it was. Nobody refers to her, calls her Natalie, but I think in the scripts it was Natalie. Because there's one episode where there's a different blonde, a different six. We only see her in one episode. Mm-hmm. And her name was Lida. Mm. I ain't making that shit up. Like, that name didn't come into my head. So, you know, and Gina had a name.
Right.
And there's a Sonya coming up. So I think it was written in as a way to differentiate. You know, and then Caprica 6 and then number 6 and probably more so, you know, for ease for costume and hair and makeup and stuff to know which look it was, right, as opposed to having to remember, oh, it's a 6. Which 6 is it? Because I'm the one that looks different, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm the only Cylon that has different looks.
Yeah.
So you're, I think, like, it was, like, put in more Barbie. Just for ease. The fashion Barbie. It's put in more for ease of you know, recognition for hair and makeup and wardrobe than anything.
Right. But yeah, and Natalie gives the second part of their entire mission statement, which is, you know, we began to realize that for our existence to hold any value, it must end. To live meaningful lives, we must die and not return. The one human flaw that you spend your lifetimes distressing over, mortality, is the one thing that makes you whole.
Only in death can you be whole.
Yeah.
And when she says that, and the look, Roz, there's a Roz, you know, that Roz, because she's facing it imminently. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you see right there, she just looks down.
Yeah.
And you wonder if what's going through her mind at that point, is she like, is she feeling like she's going to be whole? Or is she scared? Like, yeah, any human facing death, right?
Totally.
It's the unknown, the unknown. And it's scary. And... but to hear that, I wonder if that gave Roslyn any sort of peace, if you know what I mean? If you've got somebody giving you an explanation of where they are and why they feel that way. Mm-hmm. There is something to what Natalie is saying.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Like, I mean, if you, and that's the whole thing with vampires too. Because, I mean, I'm playing a vampire right now
speaking
too.
Speaking of which.
Dracula. Dracula. Is, you know, that's the thing about the vampires too, is like when in the vampire Lestat and everything, when they can't die and when you see everyone around you die, it takes on a different, you know, that they struggle with that, the vampire. So it's a common theme.
Yeah,
cinema.
It's duality, right? Like you need both sides of the equation for it to work. You need the light and the dark. You need the pain and the pleasure. And without one, the other doesn't have any purpose. And, you know, the largest version of that is, you know, with life must come death. And if death doesn't come, then how do you define the realities and the ups and downs of a life if it never ends?
Yeah.
But yeah, another shared vision. Another opera
shared
house.
Vision. This one's going to not end well.
No. And this is super creepy. When, like, Sharon wakes up and her kid is standing at the bedside. It's like, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Like, bye-bye. What?
No.
Yeah. We're not quite there yet, but it's the setting up of where we're going in the episode.
Yeah. No, there's some creepy Hera stuff coming down the pike.
Yeah. That, like, bye-bye. It's like sort of like a Shining-esque thing.
Oh, yeah. No, like creepy kids saying, like, actual big person words, like in places they're not supposed to be. Never settling. Always unsettling.
Always.
Like, why are you standing up, dressed at the foot of the bed? No reason? Just freaking me out? yeah. And it seems as if,
what
like, every
that?
Time...
I see dead people? What's that from?
Yeah, it's a Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense.
That's young baby Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, right. Yes. Anyways, I interrupted you. Sorry.
No, just it seems as if every time Gate is singing, there's like some person like oddly just standing in the wings watching him sing. Like, and most recently it's Baltar. It's like, this is weird. This, why didn't he ever sing before? We were on New Caprica for like a year and a half and he never sang. Dude.
He could have been the background in my orgies.
I know. Put him to work.
Yeah. Everybody, but it's everybody's reminiscing. Mm-hmm. It takes them back to kind of brings them back of everything that's gone on.
Yeah.
With him, with their relationship with him. Oh, I went really low there.
Yeah, you did. You took it down. You went in the basement for that one. but yeah, like, and it's, and it is also like Rosalind says, this weird, this totally dissociated moment of pure beauty in a place and in a time and in a situation where such things don't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, you know, what an awful way to discover such a beautiful voice.
Yeah. And that's right. So yeah, that you said it more eloquently of what I was trying to say, but everybody's having their moment of discovering that.
Mm.
But this scene here with Kara coming in to Rosalind, it's like a making up of these two characters and a back to trusting each other for their faith and their visions and their...
Yeah. It's very graceful, you know, because it begins with her saying, like, if you are a Cylon, this is a hell of a plan. You know, get us to trust the Cylon, get us to, like, dangle the carrot of the Final Five, which are dangling the carrot to Earth. And Kara just like kind of pushes right through it and goes straight to the dying leader shall know the truth of the Opera House. And just that look on Mary's face, just that like this feeling of, you know, like somebody grasping for a life preserver and when they're adrift and it's just like the, what did you say? Like, what do you mean? Like, how do you know about the Opera House? Just that like somebody else knows this.
Somebody else knows. Yeah.
Who shouldn't know. You know, who I've never told anybody about the Opera House. Like, the only people who seem to know, I'm having shared dreams with. Like, how do you
But
know?
Not what the dreams are.
Right. You know, it's like, how do you know? And she says, well, you know, it's the hybrid. The hybrid told me. And it's like, just like before, when Kara stole the arrow of Athena to find the tomb of Apollo, or vice versa, I can never get this straight. You know, it's these two kind of trusting each other on faith, about faith. And doing so will kind of like, damn, Fiona.
No, that's Caesar.
That's Caesar?
He's got his number 6 doll.
Oh, that's adorable.
He's literally got his, it's his favorite toy. If you follow my Instagram, you know that. And it's very fitting that while we're talking about Battlestar, he is playing with his number 6 toy. He's walking around with it in his mouth. Mm. So sorry y'all are listening to Caesar flirt with me, but
so weird. So, on so many levels.
He interrupted what you were so eloquently saying about Rosalind and
just they're finding their way back to each other using faith as a bridge to do that. You know,
it's like the piece of the puzzle. Kara saying that is like a piece of the puzzle to Rosalind, right? It's like,
yeah, you know, and then you're like, will you help me? And Kara says yes. And then it's like, all right,
it's like, plug her back in.
Yeah, find Captain Agathon, because he's the person we can trust to do shifty things without question. As long as he believes, then he finds, then he can, he'll do whatever.
Yes. And now we see the Cylons and Natalie deciding that she's, you know, and I think in speaking with the Quorum and in giving her case, she now realizes that they're doing the thing that they, you know, they're not any better than the humans if they are trying to deceive them.
Yeah.
They're not trying to deceive them, but they're trying to save their own asses. She's like, we can't kidnap them. We've got to do what we say we're going to do and give trust. And
yeah, like if we're going to be the people we want to be, then the first step in that is trusting each other. But they think that, you know, the Centurions can't be talked down. It's too late. The only solution, the only path forward is to tell Adama, tell the humans what they had originally planned to do. Like, you got to warn them what's going to happen. And so maybe they can take appropriate steps. And so this now becomes this big parallel, almost, I don't know what, trial-el? But this sequence where, you know, Natalie's coming back to Galactica, Roslyn and Baltar are going over to the base ship, and it's like people walking down halls to get to what seems to be the answers for their own destiny. And then you've got, you know, Hera and Sharon. Like, it is a big sort of movement in the last like 5 minutes of the episode.
Yes. And the Sea Rider Falcon makes a,
he does a little cameo.
Again. Yeah.
Hey,
a little inset shot.
Yeah. So who was watching this child for the entirety of the day? like
yeah, there's nobody else in there.
Yeah, Sharon comes home. Clearly she's been at work. You know, Hilo is out at work. And this kid has just been left alone for who knows how long.
Maybe the nanny just stepped out to the bathroom conveniently so that this can happen.
Right, you know.
Or I mean, that's why Hera's been in there by herself for so long that she has just seen all these sixes.
Right, she's gotten six crazy. She's a six monster. But like, yeah, I'm just wondering about childcare on Galactica. Like, mm-hmm. Is it just so safe that nobody, like, don't worry, that's fine. She can open the door and then just vanish. Or we're locking children in by themselves. What if she falls down? Like, who's, I guess that's neither here nor there.
Nope. I'm going to go with the nanny just left as Sharon got there. And we just didn't see that.
Space nanny just took a break.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So Hera's sort of like, you know, loose in Galactica. And, you know, Centurions are moving to their positions. And Sharon is like screaming down halls looking for her kid. And Natalie is arriving. And yeah, it's just...
Being all stared at by all the Marines.
Yeah. All of these things Marines, are just sort of, yeah, her guard.
Her guards.
Yeah. Just these things are all kind of colliding. All of these threads are starting to like brush up against each other and ram into each other. And yeah. And we're also like in the opera house where we're looking for Hera.
Yeah. You know something's about to go down.
You do. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that like on the page, it's... You can't quite do this kind of editorial. Like, this is all done when it's shot in the edit bay and, like, just kind of feeling your way through it. And, like, how long are we in this shot? How long are we in that shot? How long do we keep equal time for all these stories to make sure they're all tracking? You know, like, on the page, it's just, we will intercut these three things a lot.
Yes, well... And I like one, I think it's Baltar. I wrote this note. I think it's Rosalind saying it to, when Baltar gets in the ship with her, I think this is the time. And she tells him what's happening and he goes, let God's will be done. And she goes, shut up. It's time to get some answers. I just love Rosalind. Shut up.
Yeah. I don't want to hear from you at all.
I don't want to hear from you. But yeah. This goes on for quite a long time, all this.
It does.
Natalie.
I know.
She's like, not she's, doing anything wrong.
No, she saw this weird kid just walking down she's like, oh, look, it's a kid, and I know who you are, you're Hera, because of course you hung out on our base star for like forever.
You never saw me with you, but I was there.
Totally.
Maybe she was on a different base star.
Maybe. But it's also super weird that Sharon... can't tell the difference between Natalie and Caprica 6. Like, it's clearly the crazy
six.
Yeah, it's a different six. And, like, how she just is weirdly confused in this moment.
And the... Well, I haven't watched the next episode yet, but I was going to say, and there was no repercussions, but...
but there might be.
There might not be. I don't know. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
But... I do like this, the digitalist-esque, not the digital, but you know what I mean, what is it called?
Yeah, the weird like staticky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be back when we all had TVs, not you because you didn't have TVs growing up, but before cable TV and you just had antennas and you'd have the weird like signal interference of like we can't lock into the TV signal, and so it's all staticky and
it's all staticky.
Snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know shit's going to happen when she says, you know,
yeah.
Tyrol or gay.
Is yeah, it clear?
Just but she doesn't have to do
There's
this.
There's no reason for this.
I'm just watching it and she oh don't shoot me.
Plug bang. Yeah. Like this
right as it gets plugged in.
Yeah. And jump.
Boom, you're never going to take my child. She wasn't trying to.
Yeah. Yeah, like
and
this.
Like she.
This fell a little flat for me. Like the emotional math didn't make sense because it like I just didn't get how Athena was in such a state that she would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like I get if it was Caprica 6 being moved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Hera runs over to her leg. And because, again, Caprica's the one she's having the shared visions with. Caprica's the one that in the vision is stealing Hera. Like, just not any rando six. Just like.
Yeah. Yeah. And one that's actually trying to do good.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me mad.
As well it should.
Yeah.
As well it should. But, yeah. And so when the hybrid's plugged in, first thing she says. Jump! And so
jump!
And the base ship jumps away and just leaves Gaeta to sing us out.
Which is actually my frack down.
Yeah, Gaeta singing?
Yeah. I wrote kind of the whole end sequence, even though, because it, like, the unnecessary shooting, the hybrid plugs in and jumps, like, the whole, I did like the, you know, there's definitely other scenes that could have easily been my frack down, but I don't know why. I mean, I just wrote that one. I liked it went on for a long time and it just sort of everything all mixed together worked for me aside from the unnecessary shooting. Like what you just said of it didn't make sense for Sharon.
Right. And again, it didn't make sense in a way that's understandable, you know, like it seemed a little bit out of, it didn't add up, you know, it wouldn't make sense if it was just a random six or if it was another six and she thought it was Caprica six, but like, Natalie looks so different and is clearly so different.
Yeah. And is so different.
And like ending. And Sharon knows her. Like, it's not as if it's just like, oh, another six, you must be here for my kid. It's like, no, we've had like 9 conversations.
Yeah, we've just been on the base ship. The Demetrius, the whole thing of like bringing the base ship to the fleet and everything, all that. So she knows who she is. And yeah, so that made me mad. But ending on Gaeta's face, just a close up and that kind of haunting song and his. That was my frack down. Nope. Gaeta at the very end.
I was torn between two different Rosalind scenes for my frack down. But I think I'm going with the surprise of the Rosalind Tori scene. Because it's just so delicious. It's so like, you know, an about face for Tori, like the whiplash of her realizing that she's caught doing a thing. That is not illegal in any way, but is a fundamental betrayal from Rosalind's perspective of like, of all of the dudes on all the ships in the fleet, he's the one you're sleeping with.
You have to be sleeping with Paul.
Yeah. Like of all the D's, he's the D. Like, no, not him. And just that the once the Iron Curtain comes down of like, you know, I don't care if you're on your knees praying. Or if you're just on your knees, get me a name. It's like, oh.
You did not want to be on Rosalind's bad side.
No, that was just delicious. So yeah, I think that is my frack down of the week.
Okay, good one.
But yeah. But I did like this episode. I did, you know, it is definitely propelling us towards, you know, the final countdown. It's the final countdown.
Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. just a few phrases that if you say it, you cannot just not sing it.
I know. Like I was almost going to say Final Conflict, and then it's like, no, no, it's the final countdown. but yes, we are, as such, I think, and there's a lot of like really great Rosalind stuff. It's a lot of like great Rosalind, Rosalind Cara, Rosalind Lee, Rosalind Torrey. Like it's a lot of resetting and evolving her relationships with those characters, which was pretty cool. You know, so yeah, notwithstanding the oddness of, the way Natalie exits the show, if her name is Natalie at all.
I can't be making it up. I forget a lot of stuff, but I remembered her name.
Yeah.
But
yes, I did. I dug this episode.
I forgot that she died this early on.
Because
I remember there's a lot more political stuff that I got to do because I was just so happy to have stuff that wasn't number six, you know. But there's another Cylon that sort of takes her place, Sonya, if I'm remembering correctly. So, because there is more political stuff coming up. Do you remember?
I don't at all. Like you this, don't. It's funny because, like I've probably rewatched the first season quite a bit and maybe even into the second season, but I never really got past in rewatching it just for pleasure, for funsies, the New Caprica stuff. Like I never really pushed further than that. So this is all kind of feeling brand new.
Yeah, it really, there's a lot I've forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just, it was always kind of revolving around the beginning stuff as opposed to the ending stuff. And so, yeah, this is all like, you know what? Hey, guys, surprise. This show's really good. I don't know if you're fans of this program.
Newsflash.
FYI, in case you've been not keeping up, the show's pretty decent. Yeah. So next week we have an episode whose name I'm sure I will mispronounce.
I'm glad you're attempting it because
I'm going to say Sinequanon.
Yep. That's what I'd say.
Sinequanon. Because it's not like it's Latin. So you're not like trying to drop any syllables or whatever. So it's not like Sinequanon. No, no. Every letter in there belongs. Because Latin.
But I do knew that because I'm just like...
Whatevs.
Yep. I can do the one after that, the hub.
Well done. It's like, I got this.
I got that one. Oh. Next episode, I'll let you introduce the name of the episode.
Yeah. How's Welcome that? To Sinequanon.
Sinequanon.
But until then, we would like to thank, as always, Bear McCreary for his fantastic score, for the show in general and the theme of our podcast in specific. Thanks to Brett Boehm for making us sound good. And to Sci-Fi Wire for letting us talk through, you know, our alcohol dependency and surgery history and
occasionally get to the show
and occasionally talk about the show we're here to talk about. And as always, thank you to Trisha Helfer for being my ride-along buddy.
Aw, thank you, Mark.
For steering it through, because I don't know how to drive a motorcycle, so I will be riding behind you.
You be riding, bitch.
I was going to let you say that.
I've actually never carried anyone.
Really?
Yeah, so I wouldn't risk your life.
Fair enough.
I'd have to get a sidecar.
That, not for nothing, I would do that.
Oh, we should do it for fun.
We should for funsies. I can be like just a little like Robin, like tucked into the sidecar and you're Batman riding the giant Harley. That would be super fun.
Oh, we got to do it.
Yeah. Okay. If for nothing else, then the picture.
Yeah, exactly. It's a date.
It's a date. All right. Well, so we will see the lot of you next week for, I'll say it again, because it's fun to say now, Sinequanon.
Fantastic.
Yes. Take care, everybody.
Bye.